Fastline Auctions, the ultimate destination for online farm equipment auctions. Looking to list equipment? Fastline Auctions knows farmers, and farmers have trusted Fastline for their equipment needs for over 45 years. With unmatched digital reach and direct-to-farmer catalogs, they can find the right buyer for your equipment. Not to mention, they have the industry's lowest commission rates. If you're looking for equipment to buy, you can bid with confidence. No buyer premiums, no reserves, just integrity. Fastline Auctions, your trusted platform for hassle-free, cost-effective farm equipment auctions. Visit Fastline.com for more information. That's Fastline.com.
Stories behind the ag brands we love and the ag brands we love to hate. What color is your tractor? With Chrissy Wozniak.
Hi, I'm Chrissy Wozniak, and welcome to What Color is Your Tractor? The company that we're visiting with today was the inventor of the world's first modern row crop tractor. The Smithsonian holds their esteemed old number one on display as a tribute to agriculture innovation. And their first commercial cotton harvesting machine, Old Red, stands at the National Museum of American History as a reminder of how agriculture has evolved over the last two centuries. There is no doubt that Case IH played an important role in building modern agriculture. Today, we're going to learn about the past of this great company and explore the exciting future of this brand. I would like to welcome Marissa Riley, the Director of Marketing for Case IH North America, and Joe Miller, the Case IH tractor segment leader for North America. Thank you both so much for joining me today. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thank you, Chrissy. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So can you each take a turn and tell me about your background and your history with Case?
Sure. I'll jump in on that one, Chrissy. Like you said, my name is Joe Miller, and I'm the tractor marketing segment leader for Case IH. I'm based out of Rochester, Indiana. My office is in Racine, Wisconsin, which is our corporate headquarters. And I've been working with Case IH and CNH Industrial, our parent company, for the last 20 years. So I grew up on a family farm here in Northern Indiana. It's where I live today with my family. Spent 3 years working in Racine when I first got out of college. And on my family's farm, I grew up red. We grew up with a lot of farm all tractors, International Harvester tractors, Case IH tractors. So it's really something that's been born in me and something that I'm very passionate about. So it's kind of fun now as a parent to be able to bring my kids into that agricultural fold and let them experience the same type of experiences I had when I was a child and on some of the same equipment, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool, especially the multi-generational sharing of the tractor colors, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Marissa?
Yes, this is Marissa Riley. I'm the Director of Marketing for Case IH North America. I'm based in Racine, Wisconsin, which, as Joe mentioned, is our Case IH headquarters. So in my role, I'm responsible for commercial marketing, pricing, and programs. What I like to say is that when you see or hear something from Case IH, my team had a hand in creating it. One area I differ from Joe is I'm one of the few on our team that actually did not come from production agriculture. That said, I've been working in the ag industry for about 12 years now. And throughout that time, it's been an honor to connect with farmers and see that relentless passion that goes into each and every operation.
Oh, that's great. And so why, Marissa, why do you serve the ag industry? You didn't come from a farm background, but what brought you here?
It's really one of the most noble industries that you can work in. And so with that, getting a taste of it in a prior role, really saw it as an opportunity to further what's possible in agriculture, because it's really an unknown industry to a lot of people that didn't have the opportunity to grow up to it. So to be able to advocate for that inside and outside of the industry is just, it's been an honor. So I look forward to continue to working in agriculture as well.
Oh, that's great. And Joe, what drives you to serve the ag industry?
Growing up on a farm, Chrissy, and when I grew up, we had an Angus cattle farm and diversified crops as well. Today, that farm is mostly corn and soybeans. But when you grow up with that, this is one of the areas that I can say I've always known. I've always had that draw to be involved with agriculture. Growing up, I was a 4-H member, an FFA member, and it was just tied to agriculture from the very beginning, right? So this is what I knew, and this is a comfort area. But more importantly, this is an area that I developed a passion for. And so from my own personal background, it was never a question of, you know, would I be involved in agriculture? It was just what part of agriculture would I be involved with, right. And how could I help to advocate our industry forward? And I think that for me personally, it was always more about driving the equipment and operating the equipment. I always enjoyed that more so than like the agronomy or the seed selection piece of it, which is all very important, but I was definitely into the technology and the agricultural products and the farm stuff in the background.
Oh, that's fantastic. And let's now talk about the early years of Case. So it all started with Jerome Case in 1842 and his threshing machine. So I hear you're a history buff. So Joe, tell me about these early days.
Yeah, I do enjoy the history of our company and the history of the brand that we support. And you know, when you look back in 1842 and Jerome Case was a storied inventor and storied equipment person, certainly a titan in the industry and someone who's, I think it's fitting that his name is still on a major brand of equipment today. But he invented the threshing machine and moved his business from the more internal part of Wisconsin out east to the banks of the Lake Michigan. And really started there with grain threshing. And then in 1869, maybe in my opinion, some of the highest, most visible parts of his business became the steam engines. And there's still a lot of steam engines that are running, not running today on like a working farm, but there's a passionate group of people that restore and collect. I've got some friends that really get into the steam engine, which is a cool background. So when we went from the steam engine, the traction engines, to kind of run parallel to that, in 1903, Cyrus McCormick, who had his own, like the binding company, came in and combined with several other competitors and created the International Harvester Company, which was 1903. So when we look at Case and IH, both of them, you know, 175 plus years of J.I. Case, 100 plus years of International Harvester. And then right along when you get into other great companies like Steiger and DMI, there's just a tremendous amount of history and brand pride because these were just leaders in our industry that have really kind of combined to create Case IH into the powerful brand that it is in our industry.
Yeah, for sure. And Marissa, I understand that Case IH is celebrating an exciting brand milestone this year. So can you tell us about that?
That's right. Yes. In 2023, Case IH is celebrating 100 years of the Farmall tractor.
Wow.
So not only is that a historic milestone for our iconic brand, but it's also a significant milestone for the agriculture community. It's been 100 years since International Harvester really set out to create an all-purpose tractor. That tractor was used for plowing, cultivating, harvesting, and it's the Farmall tractor that many people know and love today. 100 years ago, really the Farmall revolutionized farming. And that was for both farmers and our dealers. So let me give you a quick story of what that even meant for our dealers. You know, we were talking with some dealers recently on why they own the land across the street from their dealership. It was because when Farmall tractors came about and they were starting to trade in horses for tractors, they had to find room to house all of the horses before they sent them to auction. So it started to change not just how farmers were using machines and mechanizing the farming process, but how our dealers were interacting with farmers, interacting with the community, and even down to the land that they purchased to support those farmers and the machines.
Right.
Farmall, just like the name says, it could farm all. So it's that dependable workhorse tractor that many people, again, know today and have been farming with generation after generation. And as we look ahead, there's going to be so many things that we're activating this year to celebrate that anniversary. And I know we'll have some time to talk about that later in this podcast, too.
For sure. And diving deeper into Farmall history specifically, can you walk us through the evolution of the Farmall tractor itself?
Yeah, I'll take that one, Chrissy. A couple of things that have been exciting about Farmall have been just the growth from, like you mentioned at the start of the podcast, really the first all-purpose tractor. And when you took that all-purpose tractor, as it grew and developed with horsepower, additional features, the ability to do row crop and all chores, it was a powerful tool to start with, and it kept growing and expanding as that American farm became more mechanized. I think an era that I really like to talk about is we get into the letter series Farmalls, which the Farmall A's, B's, C's, M's, H's. And really, those were the tractors that I know in my own personal background. That was my grandfather's first experience with a tractor. His family purchased a Farmall H, I believe, in 37 or 38. Wow. And when that happened, he went from a team of horses to mechanized power. And I remember when he told me that story, we were in a 2388 combine, which was a current model combine at the time. And my grandpa was operating that with the yield monitoring and, you know, dumping on the go. And I thought, man, what a revolution. What to be able to have that lifetime, to be able to see a transition from horsepower to mechanized horsepower. And, you know, you look now at where Farmall has gone and where it's heading, we're going to see some more generational shifts. But when you go back to the history, I think a couple of things that are cool about history was not only the letter series that evolved to the 560s and the first 100 horsepower turbocharged tractor, the 1206. You know, there was just a lot of Farmall innovations that led right up through the mid 70s. In 2003, the Case IH company brought back the Farmall name, and that was by design, right? We knew that we had a strong historical tie to Farmall and the sub brand and the brand that it was and what it is and what it means to the American farm. And really since 2003 until today, that Farmall name has been a critical part of Case IH's current product offering. And it's one of them that obviously we're all very passionate about.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so what do you have planned for this coming year's centennial celebration?
We've got a lot of activities planned this year for the Farmall 100th anniversary. First, we kicked it off with a special episode of This Week in Agribusiness with Max Armstrong on New Year's Eve. Max Armstrong is such a proponent for the Farmall brand, and he'll be part of our celebrations throughout the year. With that episode, we've already had an outpouring of stories from farmers about their first or their favorite experience with Farmalls. And we'd love to hear any, you know, the listener stories here. Make sure to send us a message on social media. Tell us more about what Farmalls mean to you and some of your favorite memories, because we'll be highlighting them throughout the year. In addition, we'll be at pretty much all of the large agriculture events throughout the year. You know, you can check out exhibits and anniversary celebrations at National Farm Machinery Show, Farm Progress Show, and beyond. We'll also be celebrating with collectors groups at events throughout the summer and really showcasing Farmall throughout the years there. One of the highlights, though, is going to be giving away a Farmall tractor. Wow. You can enter to win a tractor starting in February, and we'll be running that contest through October, really concluding it at the end of October with a national FFA convention. So make sure to watch for those details, and then you can enter to win that Farmall. Finally, visit your local Case IH dealer. They'll be joining in on the celebrations as well, and they can also be showing you the latest Farmall tractors. Joe, that's a little bit about the marketing. Tell us how we'll be bringing that to life also on the equipment with some of the decals and products that are coming out this year.
Yeah, Marissa, that's thank you. I'm excited for that. Starting here really right away, our production facilities that build the Farmall tractors, and it's a global footprint, but from those plants, we'll be bringing in tractors that'll have a 100-year commemorative decal for tractors that are built in 2023. We'll have the first showings of those at the fall farm show, or excuse me, the Q1 farm shows that are coming up here just in a couple of weeks. So they'll be designated for 100 years. You'll be able to see that. And I think that an exciting part of this, Chrissy, when we talk about legacy of Farmall is, you know, just having that name and the celebration of 100 years, I can promise you at every farm show, we are going to have people that come up and want to talk about their unique and exciting Farmall experience. So I think that's going to be a really fun part of our kickoff activities. Like Marissa said, you know, we've got a pretty broad Farmall offering today with over 30 models to choose from, the different segments, different applications. But more than that, we've got some exciting launches coming up here as well. So not only will we be celebrating the past 100 years of Farmall, but we'll really be keying up and talking about, you know, the start of the next 100. Wow. And I think that for as exciting as Farmall has been for the last 100 years, we're going to see a type of shift and type of a pivot here that I relate to from that story I shared with my grandfather earlier, that we're going to start to see some of these things that are truly revolutionary in the business again, right, and will drive a lot of innovations and improvements for the American farm.
Yeah, that's so exciting. And going back into time a little bit, let's talk about the history again, about how did the war years, the early to mid 1900s affect production and innovation at Cates?
So the war years, one of the things that, and I guess I enjoy the history of it, but the war by itself, and you go back into like World War II, was obviously it was kind of an all hands on deck, and the entire global economy, if you will, really rallied to the war efforts. But International Harvester was one of the leading manufacturers of war goods. So they transitioned a number of plants and did a number of work for the United States government and military to create all sorts of things and all sorts of tools to support the war efforts. Personally, I kind of like the M1 rifle. I know you can still get some of those that they've used. Frankly, the military used those up until the mid-80s. And you can see International and IH castings on the receivers as well. And those were used not only in World War II, but the Korean War, as well as for training aids since. So I've got friends that have purchased those, and they have them as collector's items. And that's kind of a bit of history that not everyone knows, is that International Harvester did make rifles to support the war effort, amongst a bevy of other pieces of equipment to support the war effort.
Wow, that's really neat. I had no idea. That's pretty cool. And in 1985, Case, and you just brought up International Harvester, but those brands were united. So what led to this, and why did that happen?
There's a book on that.
A whole book, not just a small podcast.
Yeah, it's a whole book. Yeah, I think when you go back in time, right, you look at what was building up through the 70s, and it was a buildup of force power. There was rising interest rates and rising land values, and things were really kind of going gangbusters. And then when that the recessions hit in the early 80s, it hit the farms. It hit a number of places in the economy, but the farm economy. Growing up, I was born in 1980, so I remember working on the family farm during those early years in the 80s, and it was difficult. It was difficult for a lot of farms, and that's just kind of one of those tough places where you go back in history. International Harvester wasn't immune from it. They had built a large footprint. They had a number of large products, and they were certainly I don't want to say a conglomerate of it, but they had a lot of different things that they were manufacturing. They had trucks and cars and over the road vehicles, kind of like the International Scouts and pickups and so on. And the farm economy hit them. And in 1985, Tenneco, who was the parent company of the J.I. Case Company, I believe they acquired them in like the late 60s. They bought the International Harvester Company. And when they did that, it was I remember that, there was some uncertainty for Heritage IH Farms. My dad and uncle and grandfather being one of them, they weren't sure what the next phase was. But you fast forward to a couple of years, and albeit maybe a little bit different from the Farmall story, because at that point in time, International was not putting Farmall on anything. But they brought forward the Case IH tractor and the true first combination tractor, if you will, for the new company. And that was the Magnum, which in 1987 was just a monumental product for, it was a revolutionary in the industry. And with the Magnum tractor, you had the International Harvester design power shift transmission. You had an IH cab with some Case controls. You had the Case front end, a consolidated diesel Corb 8.3 liter engine, and side exhaust, and digital date gauges, the whole thing. It was really a game changer in 1987. So What happened when that company merged in Case IH? I think there was a couple of years where, there's almost a little uncertainty, but what came out of it was just really so much stronger. And you end up with a product like Magnum that was certainly a powerful piece for the North American farm. I don't think I'd be remiss to say, though, as we're talking Farmall, the last Farmall built our Farmall Works, which was in Rock Island, Illinois, which was the original, we'll call the original Farmall plant. But the last 5488, which was a large 180 plus horsepower two-wheel drive tractor, was built down that line. There's a lot of pictures of it out in social media and in books and other things. We still own that tractor, and it's on display right now in our Racine manufacturing operations in Racine, Wisconsin, where the current Magnum tractor is built.
Oh, that's really cool. And can the general public go there? Is it like a museum?
It's not really like a museum. I think the best way to experience it would be to have someone from the public just reach out to your local dealer, help schedule a visit. Okay. We have a number of meetings and tours and things that go on. There's a handful of legacy tractors, a couple experimental units, and certainly to tell the story of J.I. Case and then International Harvester and then Magnum. So my recommendation would be reach out to the dealer, schedule a visit, or go to caseitch.com and contact us directly, and we can see if we can arrange something.
Wow, good to know. And then moving on to 1998, Case acquired Tyler Industries and the Patriot, a self-propelled sprayer that's really become a mainstay of American farming. That's where it kind of joined with Case, right? So why was this acquisition so important at that time?
I think when you look at that acquisition, and 98 was a big year for us, I'm sure that'll be another one of your questions coming forward. But when you look at the Tyler acquisition in particular, the Tyler sprayer is unique, and now the Patriot sprayer in its weight distribution. It's like a 50-50 weight split. We use a very unique to the industry mid-engine design, rear boom, front cab. And what that gives us is the ability to cover acres, and sometimes when the ground's not in the optimal condition, right? But you can still cover the ground with doing as little compaction as possible and get that that product sprayed and the crop cared for. I think when you look at why was that so important, it was a lot of foresight by company leaders at that time to realize that, again, larger farms, broader acres, certainly the commercial application part of our business, which is very important for local co-ops and so on. But when they brought that Patriot forward, it did lay a lot of groundwork for things that we're doing now with brands like Raven and some of our precision technology and some of our ability to be very, very specific and prescription-based in terms of our crop protection and crop production and application. So, go back 25 years to where that Tyler acquisition took place. Just, I'm going to say that really laid the groundwork for not only a great sprayer for Case IH, but also look at the technology piece, look at the application, the crop production and crop protection. And that's who we are. We're here for large commercial growth of production agriculture.
Right. And cotton harvesting was also a really important stepping stone for Case. And at the turn of the 20th century, what took about 100 men was completely replaced by the work of one man by 2006. The revolutionary Module Express 625 changed cotton farming altogether. So can you tell me about this benchmark in Case history?
Yeah, when you look at the Module Express, and what that did was, to your point, was we took the cotton picker and then we added a module builder to the back. And that module builder was the same height, the same width, but it was half the length. And that took away the need for a separate module builder and a separate group of employees to man that operation, to be able to package the cotton from the picker into a module and then ship to the gin. So by putting all of that into one common application, it streamlined the cotton producing business, which was key for partners and growers in that area.
For sure. And then CNH Industrial was created in 2012, bringing together CNH Global and Fiat Industrial, managing 12 brands, including New Holland and Case. So what were some of the concerns that needed to be managed really carefully during that time? And why was the merger important?
So going back, CNH Industrial, CNH was formed, I believe, in 98. When we first came together, and then CNH Industrial, I believe you're talking about where things kind of spun off relative to the management style. But going back to the earlier coming together of CNH, and the dates may not be as important as the overall branding discussion you're asking for. Mm-hmm. What happened there was we went from a company where it was, Case IH, and we specialized in larger products and, tractors, combines, planters, sprayers then. And then now we ended up with a multi-brand approach. And we had, Case IH, Case Construction, New Holland Construction, New Holland Ag, Flexicoil. And then we had our lending partners at CNH Capital. So the cool thing is you end up with a whole bunch of experience and you bring a lot of different people with a lot of different ideas, and you're positioned in a way to really help move the ball forward. It's a different approach when you're managing now from everyone focusing on their brand and their piece of that puzzle to now looking up and saying, we're going to manage a multi-brand, certainly a global company. So there was some growth and things that happened there. I've been with CNH Industrial since 2003, and so that's the only company, I guess, organizational structure that I've known. Right. But the cool thing is, I mean, we talk now in our cultural initiatives that we are one team, and we're one team across a house of brands and a lot of different brands. We talk like Raven is a recent acquisition and a recent group to join us. And what always gets me, Chrissy, is just the passion and the breadth of knowledge from multiple people across multiple brands that support different products in different areas. And taking all of that experience, all of that knowledge, and certainly all that passion and saying, okay, now how can we better position ourselves collectively to be a better partner to global farmers and global people in food, fiber, fuel production? It's truly a monumental step forward. And I think it's an excellent place to be with such a large multi-brand company like CNH.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. If it all can work together at the base and then with the ultimate goal of feeding the world, right? I think that's really amazing and great that that's how it was, everything was engaged right from the beginning, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so when did precision farming, technology, data collection, and autonomy start to be adopted on Case equipment?
In 1996, Case IH was the first company to put a factory installed yield monitor on our combine. So from our perspective, we're going to say that was one of the first pieces of factory fit precision farming components. And then you start to fast forward. I mean, this has been a fast track. So that's soon to be coming up on, I guess, with the 30 years, which doesn't seem like it should be that long ago, but it is. Yeah. But you look at the evolution of that now, you've gone from, yield monitoring and data collecting, and then you moved into a level of, prescribing, now taking that data into its analytics and prescribing certain inputs onto the farm. Then you've taken that prescription now and you've added some level of automation. And then, we talk about autonomy. So the ramp up has been significant and it's been incredibly strong. But in 2016, I believe, which would have been, 20 years since we did the first yield monitor, Case IH introduced and we showcased it a lot of the global shows, frankly, our autonomous concept vehicle, which was a Magnum tractor that truly had no cab. Right. And it went to a couple farms, one of them in Kentucky, and it planted a field of wheat. And it did so where it was controlled. It was directed to the field. It turned on the planter. It ran the prescriptions. It did all the turning on the ends and everything else. And it was a concept. There was a lot of, that experimental and prototype kind of information on it. And certainly without putting the cab on it, it was meant to showcase and highlight that this technology is coming and it works. We've learned a lot from that. And you go forward to just the last couple of years, we have brought forward the with Raven and our autonomy with Raven is truly like a autonomous grain cart operation, and which has been an industry leading feature that can help eliminate some of the strains and stresses of finding good labor and working with labor in heavy seasons. So you go from just data collecting in 1996 to fully autonomous functioning of an application. That's key. The other part of it that I would throw out before we go too much forward is there's also the ability of not just autonomy, but automation. And that is technologies like Harvest Command, where the combine will sense and set itself and make adjustments on the fly for changing crop conditions, making sure that we're maximizing throughputs and then cleaning up the sample. There's still an operator present. There's still an operator that's monitoring. There's still an operator that's handling a lot of, the crop functions. But the combine is truly working to maximize how it now works. And then that's just one of several features, such as Soil Command and APM, that Case IH has available in the market today. That again, all stems back to 96 when we started collecting data.
Right. And that's so fascinating. Just like you said, that in just 30 years, how far it's come. That's really amazing. So who are some of the more memorable people within the company along the way?
There are a number of people. I think we talk about the, you know, some of the founders and mm-hmm. some of the antics of J.I. Case were worth looking up. He was a colorful character. And then you get into Cyrus McCormick and then certainly his family members that ran the business in through the 70s. So there was a lot of leaders there. Are from a Case IH perspective, some of the leaders that we've had even recently, I would say, have just been very just strong monuments in the industry. I mean, these are people that are well known, well respected by their peers and have wanted to take the ball forward. But if I can, Chrissy, I want to talk about we have a slogan at Case IH, and maybe Marissa can even comment more about this, that we say we're built by farmers. And so we can talk about, you know, there are people and there's been books written about different employees and other things, but really, if I go today and say what, you know, kind of what separates people or sets us apart and what are people that are worth mentioning and we're talking about, that's the current Case IH employees that, you know, they're from a farm, they still work on a farm. They bring that background, knowledge, passion, and they come to work every day designing, building, selling, marketing, you name it, supporting our products. And I feel that that those are the employees that I would most like to highlight in this conversation, because you know, they don't leave their day job and go home and you know, and kind of forget about what it is they do. They go home from their day job and they climb into a tractor or a combine and they go put into practice the units that they help build and design and have a say in our direction. And I think it works both ways. Not only are they, you know, you able to take advantage of the fruits of their labor from that regard, but they're also able to come back. And as we sit through and talk about future products or product improvements or things that we're working on today, they've just got, I mean, just solid knowledge about how we use that to maximize productivity. So I would like to say, I'd like to really highlight our current employees as the ones that that really deserve a lot of credit for what we're talking about in this podcast, because Built by Farmers is, I mean, it means a lot to me and it means a lot to the Case IH employees worldwide. I know that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Very good point. And for each of you, what are a few case facts that you'd say that the general public wouldn't really know about the history of the company?
Marissa, you want to take the first one?
Yeah, there are endless facts as we think about, you know, how deep you could dig. And if we go back even to some of the coffee table books, Chrissy, that we were talking about even before this call, as we think about bringing together the history of the multiple brands. But some of those more interesting tales even come beyond agriculture. For example, International Harvester had an appliance division that was initially intended to create commercial grade items for farmers, many of them who had just gotten electricity and then expanded to kind of other areas of the industry. They sold freezers, refrigerators, dehumidifiers, air conditioners, wow, et cetera, to support the broader rural America. You go into some of the original automobiles as well. So there's so many areas of manufacturing that these companies collectively touched throughout the years, that those are some of the more intriguing, you know, little tidbits and facts as we start to dig back into the history. Joe, how about you? What comes top of your mind as you think about some of those facts?
I think the one, and you touched on it briefly, and we mentioned it before, that like International Harvester had done like the IH Scouts and certainly the, you know, some of the trucks and things like that. But I think what's also really interesting is the like J.I. Case, they built cars, they built automobiles in the early 1900s. And we have one of those on display in the Experience Center again. And we own a couple of them. And actually, it was last fall, they had it out running. They were driving around the parking lot, just making sure everything was still operational. And I believe the one we have at Experience Center was built in 1911. Okay, so it's about that age. But the car still runs, and everything, it looks nice, certainly for the age. And a bit of tidbit about how important the car business was to Case. There was a couple years that they ran in the Indianapolis 500, And I'd have to check my facts, but I believe they also paced the Indianapolis 500 once. And I believe there's a pace car on display in the museum in Indianapolis. So yeah, not a lot of people know that J.I. Case built cars. And on top of that, they built for the time, I think, performance focused cars. So that's kind of a fun one that gets people excited.
Yeah, that's really cool. I had no idea about that either. So now let's move into today and beyond. We touched on autonomy and, you know, how it first came out, but what does Case offer in terms of autonomy today?
Yeah, I can take this one, Joe. You know, as we look at our path to autonomy, it really starts with some of the precision capabilities that Joe mentioned early on. You have to have precise guidance, and it builds from there with machine communication and coordination. And then really automation is where most farmers are today. They are not looking to take the farmer out of the cab out of the tractor. Right. So with that, automation is really automating those machine tasks, whether that's across the tillage, spraying, harvesting platforms, for example. And Case IH delivers solutions in all of those areas. AFS Soil Command creates prescriptions for tillage, similar to the prescriptions that many farmers think about that they're already using for planting. They can apply that to the tillage space and have site-specific tillage, for example, versus just tilling on the average and not have to guess at those machine settings. As we get to Harvest Command, Joe did mention this briefly, but that not only reacts to what's happening, but proactively senses and adjusts the combine to the field conditions. You can literally take an operator off the street and put them in the cab and they're harvesting like a pro. So that's solving labor challenges too, as we think about automation and what's possible there. As we look ahead to autonomy, there are solutions that we've been able to unveil. Again, that cabless tractor was a moonshot. That's not a reality of tomorrow. But at Farm Progress Show this past summer, Case IH unveiled the Trident Applicator with Raven Autonomy. Right. It's really the first solution of our two brands, Raven and Case IH, coming together. And it's the industry's first autonomous spreader. And then in December, we were able to, at a CNH Industrial Technology Day, showcase what's possible in the tillage area with an autonomous piece of tillage equipment. So we're really starting to accelerate. It's a combination of looking at what technologies farmers are needing and testing it with and alongside them, and then starting to look at how it's brought to market and what those price points are. Because again, their farmers are going to be across the board on what's really possible for their operations and what they need for their operations. The biggest things we're hearing from them is, you know, how can I add more technology to be more productive and solve my labor challenges? So autonomy solves some of those. Automation solves more of those today. And we look forward to accelerating in the future as well.
Right. And that was a really good point about developing with and alongside farmers. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the successful companies really stay in that spot, right? Where you're doing it with farmers and not just providing something and hope that it works, right?
Yeah. And, you know, with that, what we've heard from customers is there is a learning curve from a data standpoint in particular. So it's an immense amount of data that one would aggregate on the operation to look at predetermined courses for a machine to operate in the field and release an autonomous piece of equipment in the field without that operator. So even as we think about autonomy today, a supervised autonomy is even more realistic. How do you have that person in the machine that is able to do other tasks instead of operating the machine every step of the way? They're essentially there, you know, should they want to interrupt an autonomous mode, so they can be checking the weather, you know, redeploying labor in other areas, or looking at how they manage their operation from their quote unquote office in the tractor cab. Mm-hmm. So there are many iterations that we're hearing from farmers on what's realistic for them and how they want to use these types of technologies.
Yeah, that's great. And so what's coming in the future? It feels like, what else could we invent? You know, we're here now, but what do you guys think that's coming up for Case?
I think there's a number of projects, Chrissy, that obviously can't speak too much of right now. Yeah. But I do think that the one of the things that just like Marissa mentioned, and we've talked about a little bit, technology is key. And as we talk about, you know, how we bring forward additional automation and we automate more features or different levels of autonomy to support customers, and they're looking at a challenging, you know, labor environment. Those are some big ones. I think other areas that we're going to look at too is the areas of sustainability and alternative fuels and propulsions and things like that, as we try to make sure that we are doing our best to help provide solutions for customers that are certainly environmentally minded as well. So I think those are things that that are constantly on our radar. It's how can we help those? And I'm a firm believer from a farm that the most sustainable or environmentally focused people are those that live off the land. You know, if they take care of the land takes care of them. And that's how I was raised. And I think that's important. So I think when you take that forward and say, you know, what's in the future, I think that we have to be looking at how can we do how can we continue to evolve in ways that give customers an opportunity and give them additional tools that might help them in that space. So those are things that we're looking at. And it's a constant enhancement too of the digital environment that they operate in. You know, people are very busy. Marissa mentioned like some of the autonomy features and some of the things they're doing. Our ability to log on to the AFS Connect portal and manage operations, manage fault codes, provide you know, virtual service across time zones potentially, or even beyond. I mean, it's that's a critical important tool, is to make sure that we can provide those digital solutions that can help our customers maximize their uptime and minimize, you know, support or service actions needed. And I think that's some of the stuff that we wake up every day at Case IH saying, how can we work and how can we continue to push forward and do better in these spaces?
Yeah, great points. And you touched on before, you know, the global perspective, especially with, you know, CNH Industrial is not just an American company. We're not just North America, but the entire world. So with fewer farms feeding more people, today's farming has to be as efficient as possible, like you're saying. So what is Case doing to tackle those issues?
You know, I think the digital piece and to maximize uptime, right? I can't stress that enough. When we talk like the North American farm, a lot of people envision, you know, corn and soybean farm where you might have a combine in a field and a tractor and grain cart and a truck running back to the bins or what have you. There are a lot of applications that are much more labor intensive, specialty crops and so on, where there might be 5, 6, 7 more pieces of equipment in the same field working a process. And should one of those units go down or something not work right, you know, the whole operation comes to a stop. And so really maximizing uptime to make sure that if there is an issue that requires service or support, that we can do something very quick, highly trained technicians, highly trained people, highly trained dealers, partner dealers with our field-based employees, to be able to reduce the amount of downtime for that customer and keep them running at peak productivity. I think when you look at the global scale and scope of CNH Industrial and the different brands we support and the different geographies we support, that all lends itself to a great way to grow the business. I mean, you look at, you know, different you know, hemispheres in terms of different seasons of use and different cropping systems, different applications that the equipment goes into. All of that builds a tremendous knowledge base for, you know, best practices and maybe even equipment upgrades or modifications that would allow us to be more productive and allow our customers to be able to gain, you know, greater efficiencies and productivities. So I think being a global company is an absolute strength, and especially playing in all the different diverse areas that we do, and then taking that knowledge, bringing it back together as, you know, again, one team that we talk about on our culture mission, which always has a customer-centric, customer-first approach. Take that information, boil it down, and say, how can we, with this new knowledge, build a better product, build a better service, build a better support mechanism to keep the Case IH customers running longer and more productive and as seamlessly as possible.
Yeah, that's great. And over the last 2 years, it's been a struggle for a lot of manufacturers. So how has Case addressed the supply chain breakdowns over these last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, the compounding supply chain issues, as well as general economic instabilities. I mean, no agriculture equipment company is immune to these challenges. And really, those challenges aren't immune or are not new to agriculture itself. These are continued and pressing issues that we're dealing with from a rural community standpoint as well. So as we look to really address those issues head on, we have transparent communications with our dealers and our customers, and we look to service our current customer base before we put a new piece on at the plant as well. We want to make sure that our customers are up and running and that their farms are productive, and then we'll continue to roll out with the new innovations that we've been talking about. So it's really been a balancing act to make sure that the Case IH customers, that farmers that are out there today are being taken care of, and that it's being managed with every possible lever being pulled, whether that's, you know, escalating shipping and expediting how we're able to get parts out to our dealers, to really going above and beyond to support those customers. I think that you would, you know, be impressed to hear just how our teams have met those challenges. And they will continue to, because when you put the customer first, you'll find really unique solutions to whatever the next challenge is that we're going to face.
And Chrissy, if I could just add just a bit to that, sure. I guess maybe just a story from what I've seen locally and certainly seen on my farm. You go back the last couple of years when we've been operating in a pandemic situation, right? The American farm, I know a lot of farmers listen to this podcast, and I just want to give them a shout out and a thank you and certainly some recognition. The acres still got planted. The cows still got fed. The hogs still got fed. The hay was made, you know, everything was harvested. But the jobs that the farmers had to do were all just made more difficult. They couldn't go to their dealership in many cases to pick up parts. They had to call ahead and pick up the parts outside. They couldn't walk into the place of business. They had to pick them up outside, or, you know, with some of the contact or social distancing. You know, there was a lot of ways that they had to do business. Where they had been doing it for generations that just really changed. And as a result, a lot of customers, you didn't hear a lot of complaints. They adapted fairly well, and they did what they needed to do to keep their operation running and to keep the world fed and fueled and clothed. And I think that I just want to take a big shout out. I think that the pandemic and some of the supply chain issues being what they were, the American farm never stopped, and they responded by doing what they always do, which is deliver for the world. And I think it's a huge testament to the industry and the people in the industry that, you know, that nothing's going to stop the American farmer.
Yeah, definitely. And you're so right. Farmers have so many challenges every single day with weather and breakdowns and everything. They definitely didn't need more stress. But no. You're right. They got the job done anyway, which is amazing. Maybe because they're so used to having to go with the wind, right? And pivot very fast.
Perhaps it was just, I guess, seeing it both from a farm perspective with my family, is also seeing it from the the equipment business. I would tell you that it was just, I found it to be humbling and incredibly impressive just to work with in this industry and with these people. That is just, I was amazed throughout the entire pandemic with just the resilience of that group.
Yeah, great points. Now let's shift over to branding, about the color. So why do you think tractor color has really meant so much to multiple generations of farmers?
With the International Harvester red, right? That red, was red number 50 that was adopted in 1936, right? Farmers used to be gray, and then they became red about that time. And each of the different brands in North America kind of fell back on their color, right? And then it became that association. I can tell you that there is a pride. I mean, these were, we just mentioned in 1936, the U.S. and a lot of the world was in the heart of the Great Depression. And the equipment that they were running, I mean, certainly at that time, a lot more families could certainly point to a closer connection to the farm, right? Because there was a lot higher percentage of the population was more rural and working in that area. That equipment that they relied on to not just provide economically for the farm, but certainly, you know, just a sustainable piece where it was the farm with the, you know, a couple cows, a couple pigs, you know, chickens, the whole thing. That was a big chunk of their sustenance. I mean, this is what allowed them to feed their family. Right. And you go back to 1936, and I use my grandfather as an example, right? He brought that, those experiences forward, and he shared it with my uncle, my dad, and my aunt. And so that became something that was ingrained in them, that's what they knew, that's what they trusted, that's what they loved. And then now I'm, you know, the third generation that's experienced that. My kids and my niece are the fourth generation. So when we look back at the color of the equipment, and for us, it's, you know, it's red number 50. It's Case IH in IH red. That's where my heart's at. It's not just the iron, and it's not just the color, but it is that strong tie to four generations of my family working the land and working together and, you know, sweating and cussing and bleeding and the whole thing just to get everything taken care of on the farm. But you do it as a family, and it's an incredibly strong place to come from. And I think that's where a lot of people involved in agriculture, where they see that strong tie to a brand or a color of equipment, is they look outside. It's just that continuity, you know, where they could see a brand new 400 Magnum row track, you know, but you know, they also remember growing up on a 53 Super M, and the continuity of it all across the generations is very powerful. And it's nostalgic at the same time. There's just a tremendous amount of pride. Mm-hmm.
Joe, you're absolutely right with the pride. I mean, it does all come down to pride at the end of the day. It's the looking at the generations of what the family and the community has built. It's why we today see, you know, people naming their kids and grandkids Case or Casey off of the heritage of the brand name, why we see proposals next to red equipment, whether that's on our lot at trade shows or on the farm, and receive wedding invites throughout the summer to have brand representatives there. It's really amazing to see what that passion is and how it continues to grow and evolve. And it's something that we really harness as part of our community too, because that pride is just completely amazing.
It really is. And like we talked about before, there are fewer farms, meaning fewer decision makers on larger farms. So what do you think brand loyalty, what will happen in this new era of producers?
You know, we spent a lot of time talking about some of the larger pieces of equipment throughout much of this interview, but as Case IH is the brand for professional farmers, that also includes your livestock farmers, as well as a renewed interest in more of that rural landowner. So we continue to expand our product lines of utility tractors, hay tools, and beyond to help them manage both their land, their animals, and more. So we'll continue to be the brand for professional producers, no matter where they're farming, what they're farming, or what land they're managing. So we look to continue to expand the lineup to make sure that we're really catering to both of those audiences, because at the end of the day, people that are taking care of the land are people that we will be working with.
Those are great points. And again, as we've discussed earlier, Case's parent company is CNH Industrial, who also owns New Holland. So I'm sure that brings challenges to the marketing teams. So what do your marketing and product development teams do to differentiate the brands and keep them separate? Is that difficult, or is it just that you run completely separate?
That's a great question. You know, Joe's touched on culture a little bit throughout the interview, but with that, we really are here to serve customers at the end of the day. So we look to have some of those common R&D activities, for example, but those brands are really important for how we go to market. Going back to that pride, we want to make sure that we're fostering that. So we do work closely with our sister brands and our teams across Case IH and New Holland to make sure that we have complementary activities, to make sure that our dealers are servicing the customers and have the programs that they need to go to market. At the end of the day, we do have a varying customer basis, so we aren't competing head to head for each and every individual customer, but we do have some overlapping geographies there. So with that, again, we do keep our brands really separate in the marketplace, but our teams work together to make sure that at the end of the day, we are able to elevate both brands and really win across the house because when we're able to continue to deliver more and more for our customers, it's something that we're able to grow around the world, not just in North America. And those brands will continue to really be the tenets of what we do, you know, fostering that pride, that legacy, and what the brands are really, really good at will help us accelerate into the future.
Yeah, those are excellent points. And you have such a rich history of serving the industry. But how does modern Case IH want to be seen? So is it still this, you know, serving the farmers? And I think we talked a lot about this, but really, what is the, if you had to narrow it down to one sentence?
We exist to serve farmers. That I would narrow it down to that. I mean, we're the brand for professional producers, where you may see other brands more on Wall Street pandering to, you know, innovations throughout the broader industry and even outside of agriculture. We're on Main Street. We're in the rural communities, and that's where we will continue to stay. Like we were talking about earlier with our brand is built by farmers. Our people continue to stay in the rural communities, serve the rural communities, and that's why we exist, to serve farmers.
Awesome. You have anything to add, Joe?
No, I think Marissa hit the points, you know, really, really well. And I think we're here for the professional producers. And I think that's, that's where I come from. And that's a group of customers that I've developed relationships over the years. I think is very important. And I think that that's where we keep our eyes focused. I think back to your other conversation about some of the different things with, as far as different branding and stuff goes, I like to throw out there that, you know, we are diversity, you know, develops strength. And I think that we get strength through diversity. And as we look at that, taking some of our more diverse geographic areas, our diverse customer base, we can end up with a very strong ability to take new ideas, new approaches, new technologies and things, and incorporate that into an area to serve those professional producers better. And I think that's a great strength and a great opportunity for us moving forward today and moving forward.
Yeah, that's really awesome. This has been such a great conversation. And I just have one last question for each of you. And Joe, you've already told us, what color is your tractor?
Yeah, it's red.
Yeah.
I should say they are red.
Yes, they. Good clarification. And Marissa, now you weren't born into a farm family, but I'm assuming that I can guess your tractor color too.
My favorite tractor color is red. I unfortunately don't have the land to own the larger equipment. So I have the pleasure of getting out to farms like Joe's farm so that I can continue to run that red equipment.
That's awesome. So where can people learn more about Case IH?
The best place to go is caseih.com, or visit us on our social channels to join our community. We would love to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Marissa and Joe, for joining me today. And thanks to everybody that's listening. If you want to learn more, links are provided in the show notes. And thank you for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to NorthAmericanAg.com or WhatColorIsYourTractor.com. And we're available on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to What Color Is Your Tractor. I hope you learned something new about the brand you love or hate. If you're a manufacturer who would like to apply to be featured on this show, please visit whatcolorisyourtractor.com/contact and fill out the form.